Welcome to Movie Crush, a production of iHeartRadio. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Movie Crush, special Crush to Judgment Roundtable Friday edition. I have Casey to my right.
Hello.
That's your
Sorry.
Cue.
Sorry. Yeah. Missed my cue.
Be a goddamn professional. I have Paul to my left. And at the distant end of this rectangular table, I have Mr. Noel.
Trying to reach out and touch you, Chuck.
Don't touch me.
Too far.
Don't do it.
Too far. I did a funny thing a minute ago. I was in the kitchen to get a refreshing beverage, and our lovely office manager was restocking the fridge to the left, and the door was open, and the fridge to the right, the door was closed, but I was looking at the left fridge and reached into the right fridge, thinking the door was open, and it was closed, and my hand smashed into the glass like a bird hitting a windshield.
Wow.
Yeah.
That all happened just now?
Just now.
Wow.
I'm okay.
So roller coaster.
It was a weedy little grab. You know, I wasn't that resolute.
Oh, I know your grab.
No. I know.
It's not a firm grab. So before we get going on the lighthouse, I want to chat briefly about your movie. Are you okay, Noel?
Did you just sneeze? It was just a sneeze.
That's fine.
It was a weedy little sneeze.
I want to talk about Paul's movie. Paul made a movie, everyone, that I believe we mentioned briefly, but it is actually out now on Amazon Prime.
Nice.
It is called Annie in the City. That is A-N-N-E-Y in the C-I-T-T-E-Y. Just kidding. And let's chat about it because, Casey, you shot the movie.
That is true.
You were the cinematographer of record.
That is correct.
And you wrote and directed it.
Yeah, I co-wrote it with Annie Reese, who's also the star of the movie.
The titular Annie.
Yeah. In the city.
Who you know from the slasher roundtables. And I'm going to record Into the Spider-Verse with Annie right after this.
Ooh. And a little meta trivia here. The movie contains a movie that I made many years ago, like within the movie.
Yeah.
It's on a TV.
Yeah.
Fact, I don't know. I'm always corrected when I use factoid.
Yeah. You know what? You tell those people, go to hell.
Mm-hmm.
Because factoid, you can certainly use it that way.
I think you can. I think of it as
annoying.
A mini fact.
Yes.
A little nugget, you know?
If people say, technically a factoid, yeah, just punch him in the face.
Okay.
With your weak little
punch. Well, next time Ben Bolin corrects me on that.
Is it Ben? Oh, God. I'm so mad at him. I want to know how you got the movie on Amazon Prime. How does that work? How'd you get distribution?
So I don't know if it technically counts as distribution. Okay, but it is. I mean,
it counts.
It's available.
Basically, yeah. It's quite easy. I just, Amazon has a thing called Amazon Video Direct.
Okay.
And you kind of, if you have an Amazon account already, which I did, you basically sign up for Amazon Video Direct.
Okay.
And it allows you to publish videos on their platform. And you just have to sign up and give your sort of your bank information. And so I have an LLC that I set up for making the movie.
Right.
That's separate from me personally. It's an LLC just made for the movie. So I had to give that information.
Okay.
And you need all that information so the money that you make, the profits you make off of the movie.
Through Amazon?
Through Amazon, yeah.
Okay.
And obviously they take a cut.
Amazon takes a cut?
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Oh. Shocking. No, yeah. I was being facetious.
Sorry. I missed that.
Bezos, he's always got that hand.
He's got to get his little grubby hands in there.
Yeah, so it's surprisingly easy. And then once you make all that account stuff, you can, you know, create basically a project for the video or for the movie. It can be a short film or a movie or whatever. And it requires a lot of information that you have to enter, and you have to have the movie exported in a certain format.
So it's not just a bunch of YouTube garbage. They're really weeding that kind of thing out.
Yeah, and then once you actually get all your ducks in a row and have everything filled out and all the information, you submit it to them, and that takes a couple days, and it actually goes through an approval process where it could be rejected if the file format doesn't conform to certain standards or if the artwork you used for the cover image is incorrectly formatted, stuff like that.
All right. So you just got to have your ducks in a row, follow through on everything, and you too can get your movie on Amazon Prime.
Yes. Yes.
Very cool.
And as far as like promotion and stuff, that'd obviously be a separate issue, right?
Yeah. Yes. They have like a guidebook where it's basically here's how to promote your movie. Tweet about it with the hashtag Prime Video. Or it's, you know, it's all you doing it yourself, you know, unless you're a big studio.
Right.
So it's on Amazon Prime. Mm-hmm. It's free to stream if you're a Prime member, and it's $1.99 to rent if you're not.
All right.
So go
we'll see it, everyone.
Yeah,
check it out. It's really good. I'm just going to go ahead and put that out there. Like,
thanks.
It's really fun. It's really heartwarming. It's got a cool story, and it's beautifully shot, and it's just a cool movie.
Yeah, I told Paul that I am watching it in pieces. Well, not in pieces, really two pieces, because as soon as he sent that email the other day, it's like, oh, man. Like, I can't watch it right now. I said, but I got to see some of it because I got to get a sense of it. So I watched, like, the first 15 minutes before I had to get in the shower, and then I'm going to finish it up probably tonight.
Nice.
Cool. Thanks,
and I liked
man.
What I saw. Annie's great. Yeah. She's so endearing as a human being, and that comes through on screen.
Yeah. And make sure, ask her about it when you record your episode.
Yeah, we'll talk about that for sure.
Our buddy Chandler Mays, too, is in it, and he does a great turn as a kind of a skeezy weed dealer.
Which, I bet that was a stretch.
But it's fantastic.
If you, to anyone listening, if you do watch it, please, I hate having to ask this, but please rate it and review it if you feel so inclined.
That even means a lot.
Even if you don't like the movie, it does mean a lot. And also just, it does help with like discoverability and all those silly things to help the movie get seen. So
I love it, man.
Same as with the podcasts.
Yeah, yep. Same thing.
The podcasts?
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys, let's talk about The Lighthouse. Casey, you saw this back in May in France, correct?
Correct. Yeah, it was not in the official competition, but it was in the sidebar, the Un Certain Regard, which is where they put a lot of kind of interesting, slightly more experimental stuff, and I think it fit right in.
I thought I was going to play on the ha-ha-ha day. No?
No, not surprisingly not. No.
All right, interesting. Do you feel like you're pretty fresh on it still?
Well, that's the thing. I was going to try to see it again before we did this, and it just didn't come together. So I'm relying on my memory from May. And
yeah, you'll be fine.
I feel like it's a movie that the plot matters maybe a little less than your average movie. It's more about the atmosphere and so on. So,
for sure. Yeah. Noel, when did you see it?
I saw it on Halloween.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, on Halloween.
Halloween day?
Night.
Yeah, when that spooky cold weather came through,
too. Yes.
Yeah.
Got out and tried to have a chat about it with my friends outside and then realized it was far too cold. And we weren't going to continue our hangs indoors elsewhere, so we parted ways. But
that is pretty funny after a movie about true elemental human suffering. And you're outside and you're like, I can't talk about this movie. It's chilly. And when did you see it, Pauly?
I just saw it today's Wednesday. I saw it last Friday.
Okay. I saw it in New York when I was there a couple of weeks ago. And boy, let's just get into it. I mean, a movie that, I was really interested in this one, A, because of Eggers, Robert Eggers and The Witch was so great and original, I thought. But also because, and I've talked about it on the show before, but I wrote a Lighthouse movie, a period piece thriller, more thriller. A couple of years ago that I tried to get money to make and sort of started and never did it. But I was like, oh, man, Eggers is doing a Lighthouse movie. I was like, I'm sure it's way better than what I was going to do. And it was. but it definitely piqued my interest because I was just like, why has no one written a great movie with the Lighthouse as the primary setting? Because it forces so many things upon you. Probably the most important thing is – isolation.
Yeah. Yep.
And which is a good foundation for a, I guess they're calling this on Wikipedia at least, a psychological horror film.
Yeah, it's like a cabin fever movie, sort of in the tradition of like The Shining or something, where you're holed up against the elements and, you know, you kind of lose your mind.
Yeah. I didn't feel it was a horror movie. Did you guys?
No, it's maybe unsettling is the word more than horror. And also, it definitely has some comedy in it.
Oh, a lot of comedy.
A lot of comedy. Yeah.
It's hilarious.
I mean, full-on fart jokes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Throughout, which were very
But again,
fun.
I mean, the character, the old grizzled sea captain, you know, I mean, it's like the most stock character you could imagine.
Yeah.
Of course that guy's farting all the time.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
It's absolutely on brand, you know. I mean, it doesn't – it does make you giggle a little bit, but it doesn't come off as – like completely out of nowhere. Like it makes absolute sense for his character.
Yeah, and it makes sense for the Robert Pattinson's character to be like, he's dealing with this asshole.
He hates it, yeah.
And he's getting fucking farted in his face on top of it all.
Yeah.
It's sort of like the stinky cherry on top.
Just for the record, real quick, I just typed in Lighthouse movies, and we've got Pete's Dragon. Lighthouse plays pretty prominently in there. A movie from 1999, a horror thriller called Lighthouse.
Okay.
A movie from 1945 called Voice of the Whistler, which looks pretty cool. Then we've got The Light at the Edge of the World, which very much centers around a lighthouse. And my personal favorite, Horror on Snape Island from 1972. I want to see all of these. Then you have another movie called The Lighthouse from 1998. It's a foreign film, so it's called Il Faro from Argentina. And then To the Lighthouse, The Fog, Hysterical, and Shutter Island. There was a lighthouse in Shutter Island.
I was
going to
mention that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My movie was called The Gravesend Light.
Ooh.
Because I should just tell people what it was because I'm never going to make it. Or you know what? Maybe we'll make it as a podcast.
There you go.
As a scripted podcast.
There you go. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. And that's the thing I wanted to point out, too, about this movie. Like, it is just as sonically interesting as it is visually interesting.
Yeah.
Like, the sound design and the palette and
it's amazing.
Sparseness and the choices they make on point. So it lulls you into this weird fugue state almost while you're watching it. And you start to almost feel that malaise and kind of confusion that the characters are feeling, which is neat. Because it's a quick setup. Two dudes, older grizzled sea captain and younger, new recruit kind of.
Greenhorn
going to this island, this rock as they call it, to do some maintenance work for a short period of time. I think it's meant to be 2 weeks or something like that.
Yeah, and that's just like how they did it. They rotated people in and out of stations and lights and this was their whatever, their next stop.
Yeah, because it's literally a functional thing. This lighthouse is to keep ships from crashing.
That's right.
And so they have to, make sure everything's functioning, do some maintenance work, some light repairs and roofing and et cetera.
Painting.
And that's what they're there for.
Yeah. Yeah, because the lighthouse gets beat up. You got to paint those things like once a year.
Yeah.
Apparently.
The seagulls be pecking. The waters be lapping. Oh, my God. All of the seagull stuff is phenomenal. There's a whole credit at the end of the movie that's just seagull crew.
Yeah.
And it's a huge list of people. I don't know if it was a joke or not, but I don't think so.
No, I think they had like wranglers.
He had to.
Yeah.
For sure. God, the scene where he beats that seagull to death is fucking brutal.
It really made me laugh when that scene came up.
Yeah.
Like, it's brutal, but it also is very cathartic when he just finally
And there was a bit of a tongue-in-cheek,
cool
I think, there.
Yeah,
I mean, parts of this movie seem like a black comedy.
Yes,
it's weird.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think the thing that's interesting, though, is there's a line that you can hardly tell when it gets crossed. Like, even in that seagull beating to death scene, it's comical and Muppety looking at first, but then all of a sudden he's just holding this bag of guts and, black blood and stuff, and then it becomes kind of disturbing. What started off as funny, I think that's a good kind of microcosm of the whole movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it's like, it's funny until it's not.
Right.
Know? And then it gets real unfunny pretty quick, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, let's talk a little bit, I guess, just about the look and maybe some more about the sound. Does anyone know much about how they shot this?
So they shot it on actual black and white 35mm film, double X that Kodak makes. And they used lenses from Panavision, but they were lenses that there's one that's like 100 years old.
I think I heard that.
And then there's other lenses in the set that are like from the 1940s. And they had to have them kind of modernized and fitted to the cameras that they're using and, so that all their accessories and so on would kind of be intercompatible.
Yeah.
And they also shot with a blue filter over the camera, which is kind of unusual for black and white because it tends to darken the image and lower the contrast. But it also brings out like imperfections in skin, and it's not a very flattering filter.
Yeah, I mean, this movie is not. When you think black and white, there's a range when you talk about black and white, and what I tend to think of is just that gorgeous, really black blacks and crisp.
Yeah,
and this movie is almost just gray.
Right, right.
It's sort of like a wash
in with, like, the
over
foggy the whole, kind of hazy
perfect
atmosphere.
Yeah.
And so, and they shot in a very kind of unusual aspect ratio, 1.19 to 1, which is almost square.
Yeah.
It's a lot taller than we're used to seeing.
Right, and he did that because of the lighthouse.
Because of the lighthouse, and also because a lot of kind of early cinema was shot closer to that aspect ratio.
I really like this aspect ratio. I thought it was cool.
I love seeing films that play with aspect ratios that we don't see all the time.
I think Wes Anderson for the Hotel movie did that, right?
It's 4:3, but yeah, close enough. I mean, he's got like 2:35 and 4:3.
Right.
He's playing around. There might be 1:66 in there somewhere. Yeah.
Nice.
A lot of television from the 90s is in a more square aspect ratio, I believe.
Yeah, 4:3.
4:3.
Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, that's like all TV, pre-widescreen, yeah.
Of course, exactly. But yeah. It's interesting, too. There's always a big fuss that gets made when they reissue some of that stuff, and then they squish it, or they stretch it.
Yeah.
And so you lose parts of the image when they do that, right?
Yeah.
To accommodate a wider frame, they have to push in, right?
Depends on how it was shot. But yeah, basically, yes. Like, there's certain shows like The Wire, for instance, when they redid that for HD, like there was more information in the negative on the sides that they could open up.
Oh.
But the problem is that when they were shooting, they only protected for like what was in the frame, you know. So there's like stands and, you know, cables that they had to paint out in CGI to like redo that show basically. And, you know, a lot of purists, myself included, were kind of like, I wish you had just done 4:3 because that is like – that's the show I watched, you know?
Right.
But, I mean, it looks good in 16:9, too.
Yeah. Well, this movie looks great. And it's just so, like, so realistic. And I know that he put these guys through a living hell. And Robert Pattinson was talking about basic, like, for all intents and purposes, at times it felt like they were living in the 19th century, you know? On set.
Sure.
Because they were there. You know, they were in a remote location.
Nova Scotia, I think.
Yeah, you can't fake that shit. And the weather was really brutal.
Yeah.
And, you know, all those scenes where he's got that rickety wheelbarrow and he's going through the mud and you're just like, that had to have been a miserable experience.
Yeah, you can't fake that kind of duress, you know. It's not like they got a stand-in to do it. Maybe there's a couple scenes where they did, but in general, it's like it's because of the aspect ratio, a lot of it's super close-up.
Yeah, and claustrophobic.
Yeah. So he absolutely was shoveling that shit.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, painting that house on that, like, weird pulley system seemed very dangerous to begin with.
Yes.
And then he, of course, falls and, I don't know. Like, it's a real commitment of acting. At the very least, you have to give it that. Whether you like it or not, you cannot deny that it is some powerhouse acting going on in that film.
And it's a very physical role. Like, he has to actually do all this stuff. And Robert Eggers, in an interview I was reading, talked about how, you know, these older lenses, they're not coated as well. They tend to fog up quite easily, especially in, like, that kind of weather.
Yeah.
So there were numerous takes. I think he said one scene they had to do, like, 25 takes of Robert Pattinson walking into the water. And, you know, with the waves and everything. And they had to do that like 25 times.
Jeez.
Just because they kept having problems with the lens fogging up all the time. And so a take would be perfectly good except for that. And they had to do it again.
And didn't Pattinson kind of lose his cool with him a little bit on that?
I'm sure, yeah.
I saw a thing where he was saying, at least in an interview, that he wanted to punch him or that he almost punched him. Because they were, I think, blasting him with a hose at some point to get him wetted down properly for, I don't remember exactly.
Yeah. I don't think it was a fun shoot, guys.
Well, it's so dirty and grimy and gritty and just like it feels like for the entire duration of that shoot, they probably didn't feel like they ever got clean, you know?
No.
It just kind of wears on you after a while.
I wonder where they stayed.
That's a good question.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, it couldn't have been too close to any amenity.
Right,
you know?
Right.
I wonder if they just rented some houses nearby or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
This is the kind of movie where like the acting is so good and it's just two of them. It almost feels like you wish you could give them a joint Academy Award or something. It's for like best, you know.
Best duo.
Yeah.
Best like head to head.
I mean,
you know?
There's one is not a supporting actor. I mean, they're both the lead actors.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see them both get nominated for lead actor, you know, for the Oscars.
I think if you had to pick one, though, I would say Dafoe.
Really?
Yeah, just because like he gets all these amazing monologues. He gets more dialogue than I mean, I think Pattinson's physical performance is probably a little more intense.
Yeah.
But like as far as acting, you know, like and delivery.
Yeah, Dafoe really just chews it up here.
Crushes it, man. That curse that he does, there's a scene where he smites Pattinson's character with this insane curse and all of these horrible things that are gonna happen to him, all because he says he didn't like his cooking.
Yeah, that was great.
He goes, "He didn't even like me lobster." Not even
me lobster.
You're fond of me lobster, ain't you?
Yeah, it was hard not to think of the Simpsons sea captain.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's totally that character. Yeah.
There's a lot of chamber pot stuff. There's a lot of gross human waste. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of sort of old seafaring. And I know Eggers and his brother wrote this. They did a lot of really good research on just sort of the superstitions of the life of a lighthouse keeper.
Yeah.
And there's all these like vintage lightkeeper diaries that they were reading.
Oh, really?
To actually pull not so much like entire lines of dialogue from, but certainly like turns of phrase and vocabulary and so on to kind of inhabit that voice.
Which they did on The Witch too.
Yes. Yeah. I think even more so on The Witch in terms of like there are lines and, you know, exchanges in The Witch that kind of come straight from some of these primary period sources. But this one, it was more like they just kind of wanted to capture that spirit and style mm-hmm. of the matter of speaking. But the dialogue itself is more of like an invention of Eggers and his co-screenwriter, his brother.
Yeah. Is this a movie you like? It's a weird question, but yeah. Like...
So, you know, we've been talking a lot about the great technical achievements of this movie.
Yeah.
Acting, cinematography, sound design, which are all stellar. But I so far, me personally, I haven't had much to say on it because I personally did not like the movie that much.
Oh, really?
I was very lukewarm on it. I felt like it was a movie in search of a purpose to exist.
Oh.
In that all of these technical aspects are great.
Mm-hmm.
Can't deny it. But I was also kind of like, what's the point? And I'm not saying that a movie needs to have some great deep thematic meaning to have any value to me, but it just wasn't enjoyable enough for me to really get much out of it. It, I don't know, like after the first probably 40 minutes, I actually found the movie a bit tedious
mm-hmm.
to watch.
Yeah.
And at the end, I was kind of like, okay.
Right.
That's just me personally, you know?
Well, here was my take is it's not enjoyable in the sense that you go to a movie and sort of have that familiar experience of a hero's journey or the character who's overcome something in the end. Like it eschews traditional film narrative so much that it feels almost borderline an experimental film in a lot of ways and an exercise in sight and sound and making an audience uncomfortable because it's not very plotty. I mean, there's not a lot happens.
But to what end? To what end of all that stuff? That's my question.
I think Eggers is playing with a different deck of cards than other filmmakers. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's making movies. I mean, The Witch was a little more traditional, but this was like he's out there, man.
The Witch also wasn't a particularly pleasant film.
It's Witch. The Witch kind of, and Eggers has talked about this, that when he made The Witch, he made it in this kind of almost deliberately austere, heavy, like serious art house kind of tone.
Mm-hmm.
And for this, he wanted to bring in more silliness, more humor,
mm-hmm.
you know, to kind of stand alongside the kind of austere look and feel of it. And for me, I think I was expecting more of the tone of The Witch or something where it was going to be a little bit more like just straight-laced and kind of heavy the whole time.
Did you like it?
I was mixed on it.
Okay.
And, like Paul said, like everything about it from a technical standpoint, the performances, mm-hmm. the way it looks, the way it sounds is all, you know, top-notch and clearly the work of like an extremely talented filmmaker
mm-hmm.
who I think is going to, you know, give us many, many great films probably over the course of his career. This one did feel a little bit like I was kind of at the end left wondering like what was the point of all that sort of.
Okay, and so it's you weird had the same take then.
It's weird
to
because
what end?
I like, I mean, I like certain movies like, somebody like Nicholas Winding Refn mm-hmm. when he makes a film like The Neon Demon, which is very much style over substance.
Mm-hmm.
Which is also maligned.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people dislike that movie. I tend to like that movie a lot.
As do I.
It's not just that, you know, I think that the film has to have some like greater significance or something for me to like it. But it, yeah, just I reached that same point like 45 minutes, an hour in, where like there was just one too many like long monologues to camera, single take, kind of like these bravura acting moments where it's like, okay, they're doing an amazing job of performing right now. I just don't know from a kind of larger filmic standpoint, like what it's doing, what it's driving at.
Yeah, I think he was almost just trying to do an experimental film where he's like, let me see if I can put an audience through, make them feel something like these characters are feeling. Because there is a little bit of that like, oh, man, like, please let this end.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
I do think, too, personally, I wish he would have embraced the silliness and humor even more.
Mm-hmm.
I guess this is what I'm saying. I wish he had more fart jokes.
Right.
Because those moments of at least levity at least made me enjoy myself while I was watching it. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise it's so austere and it has this feeling of take this movie seriously, you know, that I wish he would have embraced that silliness a little more.
Okay.
Yeah, it is. It is almost like an over-the-top, almost cartoon version of what we think of as like an art film in terms of just the black and white, the severity of it, and everything.
Mm-hmm.
You could very easily tweak it to be almost like a sketch about, you know, what these films are like.
Did you like it, Noel?
And it is a tricky question because, like you know, like I said, I didn't find it to be a particularly pleasant film,
right.
But I left it feeling a way, and it made me think about what I had seen, and it made me kind of want to see it again to look a little deeper. But I also think that you're right in that maybe it didn't have as much of a purpose as, you know, a film that I might have walked away from feeling a little bit more satisfied by. But I feel like what Eggers is really good at doing is giving you like this lens into a world that you should not be a part of. And that in and of itself is an accomplishment to me. So like The Witch, again, also pretty light on plot. Plot is sort of secondary. It's more about the experience of like witnessing this transformation and this family's kind of deterioration, mm-hmm. you know, in this isolated state. This movie does very much the same thing. You know, it's about seeing these two men kind of lose their mind in real time, but then you start to kind of be a party to that madness because you start losing the sense of time and how long have we been here and, you know, that disorientation that I was talking about at the top of the show, which a lot of it has to do with the sound design and the foggy vibes of the whole thing. But to me, this movie is about witnessing, like, the creation of a myth. Like, if you think about all those sea shanties and all of those, like, tales that they got from the Lightkeeper's journals and stuff, to me, this film is actually witnessing what that might look like a myth or a parable or like some kind of like, you know, even like a Bible story that then is like regurgitated and turned into all this lore or whatever. That to me is what it was. And I think that's fascinating.
Yeah. Well, he definitely likes to do that deep dive into like a period. And I mean, he has like a kind of a set design, costume design background, I believe Robert Eggers does.
Oh, yeah.
So he's extremely hands-on with all this stuff. He really likes using, you know, the actual materials and everything authentic. And he's very, very dedicated to small details like that. And for him, I think it's sort of like the sum of all that research that kind of creates this feeling of just being immersed in a period and authenticity and all that, which, you know, again, I think is great. I just wish that from a like a screenplay standpoint, like for instance, you know, the Witch, I thought actually had a lot more going on thematically,
mm-hmm.
That you could kind of sink your teeth into afterwards and would kind of reward multiple viewings. But
so more satisfaction out of The Witch, it sounds like,
for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Even though it's weird, I'm not a big horror guy. So mm-hmm. just the experience of watching The Witch, I guess, wasn't that enjoyable for me.
Uh-huh.
But I think I liked The Witch more.
Are you saying you were scaredy pants?
No. What are you saying, Chuck? I'm not scared. But to Casey's point, like I feel like I got more out of The Witch, and I feel like it's, in my mind, a better film than The Lighthouse.
Yeah.
What about you?
I loved it, man. I thought it was like a true masterpiece. Yeah, I mean, again, not like it's not a movie. It's not anything that you're really going to quote unquote enjoy. But I like that this guy is making these challenging experimental films. That the ending of this movie is just so bonkers. And I loved all the, you know, hallucination, sea creature hallucination mermaid. Stuff and the mermaid yeah. stuff. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was fucking great.
Well, spoiler alert, now that we've already kind of done that a little bit, but like...
No, this whole thing is a spoiler.
I think that that Pattinson's character is in hell and that Defoe's character is like some sort of his like... keeper that's putting him yeah. through these mind games
yeah.
and it's just going to start all over again at the end because the last shot where Pattinson's character is having his guts eaten by the seagulls
yeah.
That's the first shot of the movie from a distance
right
it pulls back and you see the foggy shape of the rock and it's the same exact shot and I think that was intentional huh. where it's like this is a loop and he's going to start back over and have to do this again for all eternity because Pattinson's character is found out to have been a murderer
right.
and, you know, a bad man who murdered somebody and took his identity.
Yeah.
And at some point, Defoe even says, you know, what if I'm in your imagination or this whole place is in your imagination? And I know that seems like a little bit lazy, but and it doesn't have to be this. But I think that's one interpretation that you could see.
Yeah, Eggers says that for him, like, in terms of the camera and just everything that we're seeing, the whole film is from Robert Pattinson's interior perspective mm-hmm. as his state of mind deteriorates. And it's only at the very end that we get like a handful of shots that are quote unquote objective reality. But everything else is kind of his imagination. So definitely the Willem Dafoe character could just be a complete whole cloth like invention of his mind.
Yeah. Like why would they even need two people
yeah.
to do like, you know, for 2 weeks, you know, it seems like you could get all this stuff done with just one. Maybe you need someone to.
Maybe they work in pairs.
Yeah,
just
they would
so that
first shift.
Somebody gets hurt or whatever.
No, that's yeah. true. That's a good point. That's very true.
I think yeah. that's historically accurate.
Yeah,
because I did a lot of Lighthouse research when I wrote my garbage thriller. What's your take on that they had that beautiful Fresnel lens, which is that was one of the hardest parts when I was kind of doing vague pre-pro for my movie is finding something to use as the lens.
Yeah.
They're not cheap
right.
to get a real one, and they're hard to fake because it's such a specific thing.
For the lighthouse lamp itself, you mean?
Yeah. Well, yeah. the lens is called a Fresnel lens. Mm-hmm. It's spelled Fresnel, but yeah. it's pronounced Fresnel, and it's that, Coke bottle, you know, ribbed,
right.
thick
sure.
glass mm-hmm. that it's shaped in such a way that it casts light further.
Yeah.
And it's sort of the star of the show if you're going to do a lighthouse movie and you can't get around it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was sort of the trouble we were having. We were like, geez, what are we going to do for this lens? But they got a real one, of course, because they had the resources. And it looked amazing. But what was your take on the lens and the light and, you know, what he was hiding up there? Because it's never really... Maybe part of the lack of satisfaction is you don't really find out anything in the end.
You kind of catch like little glimpses of
but there's no great payoff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like The Witch had that really great payoff at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
And this doesn't really have that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, for me, it's kind of the whole lighthouse thing. It's very symbolic that you have this thing up at the very top that you're kind of asking yourself, what is it? You're catching little glimpses of it, but mm-hmm. you're only seeing kind of the tip of the iceberg. I don't know. It's kind of a metaphor for like buried thoughts in your mind or, you know, just something that's kind of lurking almost in like the subconscious or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that for me, that's maybe why I wasn't as satisfied with the movie because whatever metaphorical significance the light has just felt kind of, I don't know, ham-fisted a little bit.
Really?
Yeah, I guess. And it, I did enjoy at the end where he actually goes up there and he's looking at the light and it's the sound gets all crazy and his eyes kind of burn out and it's very takes a cue from David Lynch a little bit in that sequence especially.
Or 2001 almost. Too.
Yeah,
like
sure.
It's like very much like he's crossed over to the other side.
Yeah.
Something that he wasn't prepared to actually handle and it kind of broke him, you know?
I feel a lot of Lynch DNA in some of his stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. If you compare this to like Eraserhead or something, you know? Similarly kind of like really thick atmosphere and something that was, you know, every frame feels kind of handcrafted very slowly and caringly.
And the sound, too. Lynch,
absolutely.
Sound design his films.
Yeah.
It was one of my favorites.
And just all the texture and grit and just like nothing feels casually, you know, like put together. Everything feels like it really is aged and weathered.
Oh, yeah.
And,
I mean, the set is just, yeah. It feels so authentic. Yeah. It's ridiculous. Like the, you know, it's tough to drink a beverage in this movie because there are basically two forms of liquid, that putrid, disgusting cistern water.
Yeah, yeah.
That, you know, he pumps out of that thing. It's just, you can almost taste it.
Yeah.
It's so nasty. And then the fire water alcohol that Willem Dafoe is just consuming, like, you know, pounding.
Yeah.
And you know it's going to go bad. Like, Robert Pattinson is not drinking for a reason. And when he finally makes him drink out of those, you know, you can even hear the rusty tin mugs. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, man, this is not going to end well.
Yeah.
Oh, and then he devolves into, they run out of the fire water and he starts drinking straight kerosene.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, then they find, they think they find more provisions at one point because, you know, they're kind of stranded. Not kind of stranded. They're exactly fucking stranded.
Yeah.
And what they find is just more booze.
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
the only
yeah.
thing buried.
Yeah.
Just like, oh, God, this is going to get really bad. But it gets a little fun for a little while when they're drinking
sure.
and dancing. And,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, you get the feeling at one point
kind of
they might make love.
Yeah, yeah. There's yeah. a lot of that tension going yeah. on. Yeah.
A lot of spooning.
And just like the sexual tension overall of, like, you know, being on this island, being isolated.
Like what happens on
the mermaid.
The lighthouse stays
yeah.
at the lighthouse.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Interesting. My dearly departed old friend Billy used to say, life would be a whole lot better if you could just fuck your buddies.
Here, here.
Great quotes.
Living the dream.
Yeah, no, I loved it. Yeah, I want to see it again. I very much want to see it again because I saw it. I'm really bad at seeing nighttime movies. I get a little sleepy, and this one, it's very conducive to that because it does have this drony foghorn.
Did you fall asleep? No. Did you fall asleep?
Yeah, I might have dozed okay. a couple of times, but then I was, you know, jarred awake by some crazy shit happening, yeah. you know? And Casey, I think you had a sort of similar experience.
Yes, I had.
Did you fall asleep?
This is why I wanted to see it again because when I saw it, the day I saw it, it was probably my third or fourth movie that day, and it was like a 10 p.m. screening. Uh-huh. So I was also like fading kind of on and off.
Did you fall asleep?
I didn't doze, but I did the thing where your head kind of falls forward, and then you realize what you're doing, yeah. and you're kind of awake
again. Paul, did you fall asleep?
I did not.
Okay, good.
I was fully conscious the whole movie. I can say that.
Well, I saw it as a daytime film because I don't go see night movies. I saw it at the matinee in New York, and this is a weird movie to New York, at least, is a little dirty.
Sure.
But it was a nice sunny day. Mm-hmm. It's a weird matinee.
The contrast,
to take
yeah.
in.
Yeah.
The worst is when you lived in L.A. and you would go to, like, the fucking Grove for a matinee and see a movie like this. And then you walk out into what feels like Disneyland, you know, with, like, palm trees and a little, like, they have a fake little train trolley car that rides by with tourists. And yeah. it's always this weird, shocking adjustment.
Yeah.
When you walk out, outdoor escalators.
Oh, yeah.
It's great. What else we got? I mean, did we cover it?
Is it thumb time?
I had a couple things.
Oh, please.
All right, let's go.
So, you know, like I said, Robert Eggers, he loves to do his research for these things.
Yes.
We'd already mentioned some like previous Lighthouse movies, but there's two filmmakers in particular that he's referenced in interviews, both kind of working in France in like the 1920s.
Mm-hmm.
One named Jean Epstein, who was like a film theorist, kind of experimental filmmaker. Makes these kind of beautiful, poetic films. And he made a series of films in the Brittany region of France,
mm-hmm.
and which kind of has its own separate culture and history and so on. And he made this film called Finisterre, like The End of the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about four guys on an island.
Mm-hmm.
They're there to gather seaweed just off the coast of the island,
mm-hmm.
and then you burn the seaweed, and apparently the ashes are useful for something or other.
Hmm.
And very quickly, one of the guys cuts his hand on a bottle that breaks, and the hand gets infected, and he can't use that arm anymore. And very quickly, like, he's in kind of a survival situation, and he's getting sicker by the day. He's having these fever dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole fever dream sequence where he's dreaming about the lighthouse on this island and the lights kind of shining in his eyes. And there's all these kind of cool abstract images happening.
Mm-hmm.
Very clearly, I think, an inspiration for this movie.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
And eventually there's like a whole rescue that happens to kind of get him off the island. And
what year was this?
1929 is when he made this. It's an interesting movie because he does this thing where he cuts away to these close-ups, and oftentimes those close-ups are in slow motion. Mm-hmm. It almost feels like Peckinpah or something, but it's like 40 years before Peckinpah did it, the Wild Bunch. So very, very innovative, cool filmmaker. There's also like a lot of handheld in that movie, which you never saw in 1929, hardly. Yeah. And then also it's almost like half documentary, half narrative, because it's shot all with people that are native, like that live on those islands.
Right.
And they're non-actors, and they just have these amazing faces. And of course, it's a silent, so they don't have to deliver dialogue or anything.
Right.
So it works pretty well. That's one of the filmmakers he referenced. Then the other one, another French filmmaker of that period, Jean Gaulmillon, who made a film called The Lighthouse Keepers, which again is, you can actually find it on YouTube. There's a really terrible quality copy on YouTube because it doesn't really have a modern day available version.
Oh, it's from like the 20s, right?
Yes.
That was another one on the Lighthouse movie list that
exactly.
I saw. It's just a father and a son in a lighthouse situation.
And so, you know, I think it's, I do like that he is so dedicated to doing his research, doing his homework. And I mean, I think he's going to make a number of great films, you know.
Sure. I wonder what he's going to do next.
Well, his next one.
Oh, does he already know?
Well, he was trying to keep this under wraps, but some details leaked out. So it's called The Northman. It's a Viking movie,
of course,
set in like the 10th century. I think Defoe's going to be in it again. And I don't know too much else of the plot details. I think you can find kind of like a little summary online, but Eggers was kind of like peeved that the details
that
kind of slipped out. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting. A Viking movie. That really does not surprise me.
Yeah. No.
Sounds right up
the Seems
this
perfect. Yeah. Yeah.
Are you going to hate that one too, Paul?
We'll see. We'll see. We'll crush to judgment when it comes out.
Yeah. Boy, Pattinson is just, he impresses me more and more.
Yeah.
It's a shame that I think there are still people that think of him as the Twilight guy.
Yeah.
Because he's just left that in the dust.
I don't know those people.
Is one of the great actors
he's
of
incredible.
His generation.
He's incredible. Good Time was
really so
one
good.
Of my favorite movies of that year, if not
he's got the
last few years.
And he's going to be the next Batman.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's got that jaw.
I got to say I'm excited for it, even though I'm not.
I'll go see every Batman ever. I mean, who am I to say? Nah.
I'm happy for the guy's payday, but I'm also kind of just over shuffling of the Batman, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm excited because he'll make a lot of money on Batman, and hopefully that allows him to do more interesting projects.
Yeah,
that's a good
thing.
He seems to be intent on doing interesting projects. Like everything he's been in lately has been Cosmopolis, Good Time,
High Life.
High Life.
Yeah.
Yeah, like he's
he worked with James Gray, Lost City of Z.
Yeah.
I mean, he's made,
seen that.
He's
was
made
that good?
Like, I thought it was okay. It was probably my least favorite James Gray movie so far.
What else did he do?
Gosh. Little Odessa, The Yards, We Own the Night, Two Lovers,
The Immigrant.
And the new one.
Ad Astra.
With
Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet either.
Yeah.
I got some work to do. So, all right, I guess let's rate this puppy. What do we do, Noel, thumbs?
Yeah, we do thumbs.
1 to 5 thumbs?
1 to 5 thumbs.
Casey, let's start with you.
I'm going to say three out of five thumbs.
Three thumbs.
Me. Yeah.
Okay. Noel?
I'm going to do 4.5 thumbs.
Oh.
No, 4 thumbs.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
2.5 thumbs.
2.5 thumbs. Just a regular human with an extra little...
a little knob or something.
Yeah.
What do you call it when you have a little bit of a tail growing? What's that called?
I'm not sure, Chuck. I'm sure there's
atavism,
a word for it.
Maybe.
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 Mm-hmm. I'm going to give it... Geez. I mean, I'm going to give it 4.5 thumbs. And that half thumb is like... Got a really big, thick fingernail, like Lighthouse Willem Dafoe fingernail that's got disgusting junk underneath it.
Nice.
I thought it was a masterpiece. It was, you know, when I described it, Emily asked, you know, she didn't go to the movie in New York, but she asked what I thought about it. And so did Paul Schneider at dinner. And I was like, you know, it's hard to describe. It's like it's unlike any movie I've seen and bold and experimental. And I like that this guy is out there making these kinds of movies.
Oh, I agree. I'm very happy that he's out there doing what he's doing. I think it's really cool that, you know, a black and white like austere art house movie is, you know, getting people out to see it.
Yeah, and I like like the idea of testing an audience and what they can take, because it's not extreme like, you know, some kind of horrorcore thing where you're like, oh, I could just barely sit through it.
Yeah.
But it's extreme in another way.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. How many thumbs is that total? I can't do math.
Let's see. I gave
you gave four and a half.
Four point five. No, I did a solid four.
You downgraded. That's right.
Yeah,
downgraded.
So four. 8.5, 9.5, 10.5, 11.
I had three, so 14.5, something like that.
All right.
14,
and then divide that by four. And what's our average rating?
Oh, gotcha.
Go see it, everybody.
Three point something.
Bunch of dumb filmmaker types who don't know math. All right. Thanks, dudes. Like these roundtables.
Yeah.
We'll get another one going here because there's a lot of good movies coming down the pike, obviously.
I think The Irishman has got to be on the short list.
Yeah, let's do that.
That's
next.
Easy for us all to just watch at home because it's well, no, actually, it doesn't come out on Netflix till the
27th,
new year.
I think.
Comes out. No, that's right. That's right.
Here in Atlanta, yeah, November, comes out this Friday.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should make a point to see that one in the theater, I think.
I'm going to be there day one.
Well, I know you are, Casey. Yeah, too. You're going to be running the film through the projector.
That's true. That is true.
Is it going to actually be film?
No, it's going to be a DCP.
Yeah,
he's going to hit the button.
I think there's like some prints that might circulate, but no, it'll be DCP.
DCP all the way, guys. All right, thanks, dudes.
Thank you.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.